And all the other devotees are saying, you know, you shouldn't do like that. And then he told this story when he was, I can't remember which place, he was in one city, maybe it was Belgaum or something. And there was, a local chapter of that, you know, their institution. And the head lady who was in charge of the institution used to come because she liked the temple and, you know, the kirtans and stuff like that. And when he was there, he would speak so strongly that she would be crying. Yeah. And this went on for some time, and then eventually she became a devotee. She gave up being with Sai Baba and just became a devotee. So therefore he has no compunction about speaking strongly, because he's seen that it gets results. That kind of, I say, you were saying the chopping technique, used to say. Also, the description of the danda, the sannyas danda, you have that curved piece on the front called the prash. So it's got two, I think Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives two, either one or two. I don't remember if he gave, Puri Maharaj gave one, and one of them is written in Chaitanya Charitamrita, in that Dandavanga Leela. And so one of them is that it's the supersoul. So it shows that one is preaching, or one is delivering the message of the Supreme Lord. And the other is that it's a like in battle, they have those special like battle axes with the curved thing just for cutting off heads, like that. Yeah, like that. And he said, so it's like that. So that's where, you know, the chopping technique. You just go in and chop. Because, you know, sadhu means to cut, so. And next paragraph. I advise all to preach the teachings of Rupa Raghunath, disciples of Lord Chaitanya, with all energy and resources. Our ultimate goal shall be to become the dust of the lotus feet of Sri Sri Rupa and Raghunath Goswamis. You should all work co-jointly under the guidance of your spiritual master, with a view to serve the absolute knowledge, the personality of Godhead. You should live somehow or other without any quarrel in this mortal world, only for the service of Godhead. Do not please give up the service of Godhead in spite of all dangers, all criticisms, and all discomforts. Do not be disappointed, for most people in the world do not serve the personality of Godhead. Do not give up your own service, which is your everything and all. Neither reject the process of chanting and hearing of the transcendental holy name of Godhead. You should always chant the transcendental name of Godhead with patience and forbearance like a tree, and humbleness like a straw. In our line, then, is this service to Rupa and Raghunath. So Rupa, because they set the, Rupa Goswami is given the process, and we see that Raghunath Das was very, very expert in practicing this process. And in, you know, great humility, he was always chanting in that. So one should not give up this process, no matter what difficulties come, because as we are seeing from the story of Bali Maharaj, that difficulties are always going to be there. That's a natural thing. Is that in this world, we have a tendency to want to think that it will be nice. Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that there's the living entity in this world then has two illusions. They're called Vaikuntha Brahma and Ananda Brahma. That Vaikuntha is that the place is eternal, and Ananda is as full of happiness, because that's what the spiritual world is. So the soul automatically thinks that it's going to be like that there. It appears that the living entity hasn't understood that they've left the spiritual world. You know, because they're seeing the spiritual world, living in the spiritual world, like the spiritual world, but want to enjoy the spiritual world. So then, because of that enjoying mood, then the difficulty comes is that the living entity has to be transferred to this world, where they can do such things. And then the problem, how do you say, then they're under this illusion that it's still eternal, like in the spiritual world, and it's still full of happiness, because they were very happy there. Therefore, there's that point that, you know, everyone's looking for happiness, everyone wants to be happy. But one has to know how to get that happiness in connection with Krishna. So when he's happy, we're happy. So happiness is natural, but the intelligent path is to know that by Krishna being happy, then we'll be happy. Otherwise, the tendency is that we perform the devotional activities because it makes us happy, which is okay, because at least we're turning to Krishna. But then that means it limits what Krishna can do, how he can deal. He can only deal in such a way that you're happy. We'll stay close to him if we're happy. And if we're not happy, then he won't, you know, the relationship is not there, we may go away. So at least we've come to him, so that's good. He's happy with that. He's pleased with that. But we see is that the path given by Rupa and Raghunath then is that we are trying to please Krishna and his happiness. That's the definition of our happiness. When he's happy, then by definition we are happy. That creates then a whole different atmosphere. Because then Krishna then can do whatever he likes. Because then whatever he does, because it makes him happy to do anything he likes, then we see the mood of Braja. That is the uniqueness. Everywhere else, then it's a little formal. He's the Supreme Lord, or he's, you know, the most exalted person. So because of that, then he should always behave in a certain way. Always behave very, very nicely and everything. As we see is that the tricks that Krishna does in Dwarka and that are a little bit more subtle. They're a little bit more hidden and they're not as noticed. You know, we'll see that, you know, Krishna himself would arrange for Arjuna to kidnap Subhadra. Arjuna had come, and then because Duryodhana was going to arrange that she was going to be married, Balaram was arranging that Subhadra would be married to Duryodhana. And Krishna didn't like the idea at all. So when Arjuna came, then he asked him, well, you're not interested in the Subhadra? And so then he had heard about Subhadra in the Gurukul under Dronacharya. Maybe Satyaki or somebody from Dwarka had come to study there also. And so he had described, you know, about, I guess, in talking about Krishna and Balaram, and they also talked about the sister. So he was always intrigued, but, you know, he'd never thought about it. So then Krishna then came and said this and that, but then he said, but she's under the strict care of Balaram. She stays in Balaram's house and no one sees her, like that. So, and Arjuna wasn't interested to kidnap her if she wasn't interested in him. Because, you know, he didn't want to displease the girl. So then, but there's no way for him to see her. So then Krishna said, so you dress up as a sannyasi, like that. You take the dress of a sannyasi, you know, leave all your weapons and everything, you hide them somewhere, you dress up as a sannyasi. And then you come and I'll arrange for a place to stay. And Balaram always invites, you know, sages and that over to his house and then arranges, you know, prasadam and organizes that Subhadra will serve them the prasad. That way then she'll get the pious credit for serving the sadhus. Then her, you know, her life will be more prosperous. So then Arjuna then came. And then, because he was, you know, dressed as a sadhu and all that, then all the guards just let him through. No one even thought, questioned who he was. And he came, and then Krishna arranged a house. Balaram then invited him many, many, many times. And Arjuna, while he would be eating, he'd be looking at Subhadra. And she'd be serving. She's thinking, this sannyasi is a little different from the other sannyasis. you know, generally they're more, a little more detached, you know, this sort of thing. But just in her mind, she thought, well, maybe he's looking for a wife, who knows. But it's somehow another, it didn't bother her, but she just, like this. But she did notice that he was very big and powerful and, you know, like a kshatriya. He wasn't like a normal sadhu that she had seen. So then after practically the whole 4 months had gone by, then Krishna came to Subhadra and said, so, you know, what do you think of this arrangement, you know, to marry Duryodhana? What do you think of this Duryodhana, Hare Krishna? So then immediately Subhadra like screwed up her face, like made a face like, you know, not very interesting, you know. But at the same time, if that's what her brother arranged, that's what she would do, you know. Because the principle is whoever a girl marries, that's who she has, you know, has a close relationship with. So then, you know, it's just an accepted thing, whoever it is. So then, and then Balaram said, well, what about Arjuna? And then her face lit up and says, that's a good arrangement, you know. And then when she said that, then Krishna said, but he's come here to Dwarka just for the purpose of winning your hand. You know? And she said, he's come here? When did he come? Oh, he's been here for the last 4 months. You know? And she said, what? If Arjuna was here, I would have heard about it. You know, because he's a big personality. Everyone would be talking. You'd see him in the streets. You'd hear about him. I haven't heard about him all. He says, no, he's here and he's come just to win your hand. And then she was, you know, he was, you know, saying it in a very clever way. So she's thinking he's here and this, and then she put it together that sadhu is Arjuna. So then she became very enthusiastic, and then Arjuna was invited for the last time to come and eat. So then, at that time then, you know, how you say, but Krishna says, but he wants to know if you're interested or not. He doesn't want to, he's not going to, you know, kidnap you if you're not interested, you know. So then, the next time, then she made it very obvious that she was interested, like that. So then, while Arjuna was eating, his heart was, you know, palpitating so much, he couldn't even hardly eat, so, like this. So then, Balaram, then, after the 4 months had been, you know, were over, then, he, you know, after the meal, he gave him all kinds of jewelry and, you know, very opulent things. And then he went back to his apartment, and then he, you know, Krishna came to him and said, so, and he says, yes, we're, you know, it'd be a good arrangement. But he says, but how am I going to kidnap her? She's under the protection of Balaram, right? Nobody can defeat Balaram, you know, so he's the Supreme Lord. You're not going to get away with any tricks there. And that, and plus, then the whole cities, you know, the Yadavas are, you know, famous for their prowess. So you can't, how to arrange this? He says, don't worry. He says, after the rainy season, because they've been, you know, cooped up inside Dwarka for the whole time. You know, so you're surrounded by water and it's raining and, you know, you can't go on the land because it's muddy. So for 4 months they're there. And then after that, then they all go out for a big picnic in the, I think it's the Raivataka Mountain. It's just right on the mainland, just next to Dwarka. And he says, at that time, everybody will be relaxed and everything, and no one will be in a fighting spirit. And as is the tradition, then the girls will all go to the temple, worship the deity, and then they'll come back. So at that time, then you can catch. So he told them, now you go shave nicely, you know, dress, you know, like Arjuna instead of like a sadhu. And you take my chariot, my horses, he's got those special celestial horses that can run at the speed of mind. And then Krishna makes all this arrangement, and then Arjuna comes while she's coming back from the temple and kidnaps her. And then after doing that, then immediately then there's a call to arms, whoever's the convener of the meetings and blows the war trumpet, so they all come, everybody's really agitated, you know, because Arjuna just stole Subhadra. And then, you know, as the whole place fills up with all these, you know, kshatriyas making so much ruckus, then Balaram speaks and stands up, and they all go quiet. And then he's saying, you know, how are we supposed to tolerate this? You know, we've been this Arjuna. He doesn't even have the good behavior to come in, you know, just approach us. You know, are we so unapproachable that he can't come? He just comes and steals away our girl, you know, without any discussion. And then at that, then all the kshatriyas start roaring and standing up and bring my chariot, bring my armor, bring my weapons. This is war, you know, like this. And it's really agitated, and Balaram's eyes are red, and you know, he's really relishing the whole mood there. And then in that, then he turns and looks at Krishna. Krishna is just sitting there on the seat, completely unagitated, perfectly peaceful, as if nothing was going on. Then Balaram, seeing that, then turns back to all the kshatriyas who are there and says, "Be quiet, you fools! Why are you making such a ruckus? Krishna here is so peaceful, and you're making all this noise." So then everybody's quiet. And then, you know, they all turn to Krishna. What is he saying? So then he says, "No, it's Arjuna has done a great honor to our family." So immediately, then what? You know, catches everyone's attention. Then you can see his cleverness. It's just the first thing he says is something that makes the whole audience agree with him. Because if he just gets right to the point, they may agree, may not agree. So he starts with something they must agree on. So he says, "Of course, we're not going to sell our daughter, because one of the eight rites of marriage is asura. So asura means that the boy pays money to the girl's family, and then they give the girl like that." This is seems to be a very common. It's practiced by the Islamic community. Many of them. That's the system. The boy's family gives great wealth to get the girl. So it's not recommended. In the Vedic literature, then that and paisach. Paisach means like when the girl is asleep or in some way disoriented, then the boy comes and catches her. So she's not aware of what's going on. So these two, though they exist, then the Vedic literatures reject them as proper. So he immediately starts with that. "We're not going to do that. We wouldn't sell our daughter." You know, so immediately everybody will say, no, we're not going to do that. Then he says, then he takes one a little less closer, but a little less light. And he's not going to accept her in charity just like some cattle or some other, you know, gift like that. So then it's kind of like, oh, never looked at it like that. And then he said, of course, he's going to, you know, do the honorable thing of, you know, as a kshatriya, he's going to, you know, take the girl by force. It's the only natural heroic thing of a great hero. So then they're all kind of, well, I don't know, but okay. You know, and then Balaram again, you know, says, you know, but how can we tolerate this? You know, he just comes and when nobody's, you know, looking this, that, he's not. And then again, everybody roars up and starts a whole riot, and then Krishna calms everyone down and then says, and anyway, he's already touched the girl, so they're married. He's on my chariot with my horses. You're never going to catch him. So, you know, what's done is done. You might as well call them back and let's have a proper arrangement. You know, so this, that, some grumbling, some more discussions, and then they all agree, and then they're brought back, and then a nice wedding. So we see as Krishna does all these things, but it's more behind the scene. You don't really notice it. I mean, because in Mahabharata, this detail is not given. This is given in the Bhagavatam. You know, like that, this kind of the inside story of what's going on. That Krishna's arranged it all and all these different things. So many times Krishna arranges things, and like Balaram doesn't know about it. You know, so we see is that this cleverness is, and that's in general. So he can be something clever. Vaikuntha is not clever at all. He's just the Supreme Lord, so nice, so wonderful. But in Dwarka, a little bit more clever. But we see in Vrindavan, because anything goes. Whatever Krishna does is perfect. Whatever he does, the Brajvasis are happy. So because of that, then he is able to do so many things. You know, whatever he likes, whatever his heart's desire is, he can do. And the Brajbasis will love him for it. So that's what is a special thing that is Rupa and Raghunath is giving, is that service to Radha and Krishna in that complete surrender. So that then Krishna's happiness, that's the definition of our happiness. There is no other definition. By doing it, we're happy. That's not the perfection. That may be the beginning stages in devotional life, but as it matures, that love for Krishna matures, then it will be what makes Krishna happy. That's what makes us happy. So the beginning stages will be what makes me happy is what I like, the later stages. So this is what we see that Rupa and Raghunath have given. It's very unique and very special. You know? And so we shouldn't be worried that others practice, don't practice, have practiced, have given up, you know, or in our practice is so much difficulty. Because Krishna is trying to bring us to that point of what the Brajavasis are, you know, complete surrender. So there's that that pleasure that he receives from that, then the living entity actually then is the most happy, most pleased. So that's a uniqueness. So he's saying that one should keep that faith and not lose it. Anything on this?
Can you add anything? Any comment? Whether anyone else takes to it, it's successful.
Yeah. Do not be disappointed, for most people in the world do not serve the personality of Godhead. Do not give up your own service, which is your everything and all. Neither reject the process of chanting and hearing of the transcendental holy name of Godhead. You should always chant the transcendental name of Godhead with patience and forbearance, like a tree, and humbleness, like a straw. Because the tendency is that because we take up Krishna consciousness to become happy, to solve our problems, then when we run into problems within the devotional movement, the tendency is then to become disturbed or even possibly reject the process. Because we do things for a result. We have a result in mind, so we look like for a process to get that. So by hearing the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, then we hear about that this is the ultimate happiness, the ultimate everything. And so then, you know, we're attracted because we've tried everything else and it didn't give us, you know, anything, what we were looking for. And then here it's being promised. But then the tendency is to think that, you know, whatever is great, then everybody must be into it. You know, this Atmavan Manvite Jagat. So because I'm into it, naturally everybody will be into it. So when you see people aren't into it, then you may doubt, well, maybe there's something wrong with it. Right? You are doing something, you're very confident you're doing it, then other people tell you that's stupid, and they're more confident than you, then you start to doubt, and you think, well, maybe they're right. Like this. So the materialists are very confident of their materialistic position, and that devotees, you know, are missing the point. So we have to be very careful to avoid that problem. And then within, that's outside Krishna consciousness. Then within Krishna consciousness, then we may run into so many difficulties. You know, we may take up the devotional path with the idea that it's going to fulfill all our happiness. So by conditioning, happiness means material. So sometimes we judge advancement in Krishna consciousness by material facility, material regard, material wealth, material, you know, position, like that. You know, I've made it, I'm a temple president, you know, I have my flat, I got my car, you know, I make so much a month. There was a time, I don't know if it's still there now, there would be ads and BTG and other things for a position, temple president. Temple president wanted at this temple, you know, and what do they list? They list all the facilities they'll get, you know, life insurance, they'll get a car, they'll get this flat, they'll get this, that, and you know. And so then it's seen that, well, I've been doing Krishna consciousness so long, you know, what do I have to show for it, right? And so what do we look at for evidence that we've gotten something from Krishna consciousness? Then it's something material. Position, facility, honor, you know, some kind of wealth, or, you know, I got a place, I got security, I got safety. You know, all these kind of external gross and subtle things, but material. So here is that we shouldn't be disturbed if these things don't go nice. That's this whole pastime of Bali Maharaj is giving us, is that we shouldn't worry about this, because the material world is a material world. It's, by definition, it has to be trouble. There will be trouble. It's not trouble. So then, therefore, we should always stick to. And so if we're patient and we have forbearance, then everything will work. We have patience, Krishna consciousness will come, we're able to tolerate, you know, all the troubles that are there, you know, from the material energy. Then we see that it becomes very nice. So that way then we don't go away like that. So we have to, because if we give up the process, then everything's lost. That verse in the 10th canto of Bhagavatam, I think it's 14.8, then it explains how if you just stick to Krishna consciousness, favorably performing, then going back to Godhead is the birthright of the devotee. It's just the natural inheritance of the devotee. So all one has to do is stick to Krishna consciousness. You know, of course, that's the principle. And that's what's actually going on. It's like the same as just chant Hare Krishna and everything will be perfect. But to chant, to be able to chant all the time, means that we have to avoid the offenses. To avoid the offenses, then we have to be pure, you know, or have to be purified. We get purified by the other aspects of Vaidhi Sadhana. So all we're trying to do is always chant and always be situated in devotional service. But then all the other stuff goes along with it to ensure that we our conditioned nature doesn't take us away like that. So then here's the same thing. If we're patient, tolerant, then and humble. He says humbleness like a straw. Then these things, then we will, everything will become perfect. Whatever's talked about that's said you'll get, we will get. It will be achieved. But we just have to be able to get through this little bit of trouble that, you know, the material world has to offer. Is that okay? Something else?
Something like Rupa Goswami says, give up all karma, all gyan. Yes. Sometimes we hear, you know, we like this guy, it's a nice lifestyle. We like enjoying the devotees are nice and not violent. But then you start enjoying it and some problem comes because you're actually wanting some kind of enjoyment. Forgetting the real goal of pleasing Krishna. Then you get disturbed by the different aspects of the process. It's also the process. We're getting hung up on devotees and the interactions and we can leave. But it's only the process, but there's still the prayojana, the actual goal and we lose sight of that.
Yeah.
And generally it's because we're still looking for some kind of happiness in society or this karma again, we still want some, maybe liberation. Again, if you want.
Yeah.
But still, it's still for my pleasure and not actually for Krishna's pleasure.
Yeah.
So if we lose sight of the goal, then, you know, anything can happen, even in the process.
That's a good point. Since no one does anything without wanting a result, if you forget what the result is, you give up the process. You never thought of that. You know? One's doing the process, but then you get so caught up in the process, you forget the goal, and then if something goes wrong in the process, then you just, that's a really good point. One always has to keep the goal in mind. Yeah. It's also that aspect of always remember Krishna. And then never forget. So that we have a tendency is the rules and regulations, which are the aspects that create the never forget, because it looks like substance, and we can relate to them and deal with them quite easily. And then the always remember, and that's all the, you know, keeping that, you know, like the hearing the Lord's pastimes and keeping the goal that we want to please Krishna by our service, and that then that is a little more subtle. you know, or the other, and then the actual just thinking of the service, absorption in the service, engaging one's conditioned nature in the Lord's service. But maybe we remember Krishna, maybe we don't, but in any case, since it's being done for Krishna, it's Krishna's service and one is benefited, one is purified. But one has to keep in mind what the goal is to always remember Krishna. And then it works. Or you get the other, where they just say, well, just remember Krishna, and then they won't get involved in the actual important elements of the process that are connected with our conditioned nature. So they just want to remember Krishna, but without purifying themselves, so then they forget fixes. That's good. Yeah, because the mind, it sees a situation, then it wants something out of the situation, then it acts. You see it so many times, is that there'll be something is there, let's say you have something, and it's just sitting there. No one's doing anything with it. It could be sitting there for years and no one's doing anything with it. But then if one person comes along and starts doing something with it, then people immediately start to notice those things. They notice that item and themselves and what they could do with it and what they would do with it, their goal. Then they say, no, we're going to use it. Though it'll sit there, you know, it'll just rot. But if somebody comes along and says, okay, I'll fix it and use it, then everybody, no, we'll use it. We have a plan for it. Because that's how the mind works. It goes from thinking to feeling. So feeling is your goal. Then what will you do? So as if you forget the goal, then you won't work. Because that comes first. Then you see the goal, then you agree to work. You know, no one's working without having a goal. Like that. Or if they are working, they'll be confused. What is this for? Why am I doing it? They won't have that determination.
How could we include in the same line the fact that in Krishna consciousness the means and the end are the same?
Yeah, means and the end are the same. But the when we see that the end is to please Krishna, then the means also are to please Krishna and are more pleasing to Krishna. You know, if our end is to please ourselves, then the means will be for ourselves. So like that. So in the material, then there's a difference between the two. You perform the activity, then you get the result. But in the transcendental process, being able to eternally perform the activity is the goal, you know. And then, if anyone has that affection for Krishna, so it's the process and the goal are the same. But the closer you get, so one has to be able to make it where they are the same by having the same purpose for both. Otherwise, if there's the goal, there's shorter term goals of ourselves being happy, then we will see is that when those are obtained, then what's next? What will inspire us to keep going to the greater goal of, you know, pure love for Krishna? Like that. So it's a subtle point. It means the soul is made out of, is ananda, is made from ananda. But the thing is because they're coming from Krishna, and their energy, and they're minute, therefore their happiness is dependent upon the Krishna's happiness, who's the origin. He's great, and he himself is the enjoyer. And so that's the thing. Though they're both Satchitananda, but there's a difference in that when Krishna's happy, that's when we're happy. You know, it's just like in the material world. We say, well, you know, people are becoming happy in the material world without Krishna being happy. But actually, if you look at it, someone's becoming happy, you know, have any, you know, good quality happiness in the material world, it's because they're actually following Dharma or getting closer to Dharma. So because Krishna organized the material world in a certain way, therefore there's that if you follow his direction, then he is pleased. But since we're only looking for material result, he only reciprocates with the material result. He doesn't give himself, he doesn't give devotion. because we weren't doing it in to please him, so therefore it's not, but it's closer, it pleases him. While sinful activity doesn't please him. Therefore then we are not pleased by it ourselves. Like that. Though seemingly if when we attain it we're happy for a moment, but then immediately there's distress afterwards. So anything that ends in distress, we don't call anything before that happiness. You know, we won't. We're having a big, you know, gathering of, you know, all friends and relatives, and everyone's having a great time, and it's been going on all night, but then at the end of the night some tragedy happens, then the whole night would be considered that it was bad. No one will remember the 6 hours of happiness, but only remember that 5 minutes of distress at the end. So whatever it ends with, that's actually how you have to define it as good or bad. But if something is done in the mode of goodness, then we see there may be great austerity before that, but because it ends in happiness, none of us says it was all worthwhile. You know, whatever was there before, you know, that's the way life is, but it was worthwhile. We got what we wanted. And that happiness will last, you know, for seemingly, you know, more time. You know, it may last as long as this body or a few lifetimes, and then it will run out. But because it's pleasing Krishna, therefore, it's his rules, so because he's pleasing him, therefore you're happy. So that's the thing. So one can't get away from that principle. Is that we have to serve, and our happiness is dependent upon Krishna's happiness.
Isn't that quite a high... That sounds like you have to be above the dualities to be honest in doing them.
Yeah.
So you're looking at bhakti.
Looking at?
Would it be bhava-bhakti that you're
there? That's bhava-bhakti is where you can really do that, because in the madhyam stage, even ruchi and asakti is because it's a mix between we want to do it for Krishna, but because the taste itself is so nice, that's our inspiration. The direct inspiration is that the chanting is nice. We have an actual taste for the name, a transcendental taste for the name. And we become transcendentally attached to the process of devotional service. So then when we cross into bhava, then the conditioned nature is gone. So then there's nothing from that it pleases any of the conditioned aspects. Though those aspects have been fully engaged in Krishna's service. But then on the transcendental platform, the first stage is also, then one adjusts with the spiritual platform. That's the first two stages of the bhava sadhana, is that you adjust with the transcendental situation, the transcendental form. You have to get used to it and used to the association of the environment and how to move and work within it. But then the next stage that one has to get over is that meditation upon Krishna is your focus and not enjoying the wonderfulness of the transcendental realm. That's the thing, is that that's the next stage. As you see those gopis who didn't go to the rasa dance, they were enjoying the spiritual world. They were very happy with their household duties and the children and all the interactions with the family and, you know, sticking their cow dung patties on the wall. It's all nice, it's wonderful. You can't get a nicer situation to enjoy in than the transcendental realm. Because Krishna being the supreme enjoyer, that realm has been created for him to enjoy. But the thing is there's only one enjoyer in the cosmic creation, that's him. And then everybody else is servant. Is it, or sub-vritti, right? Let's see, other part of that.
Ekriya Krishna.
Krishna, he's the enjoyer. So the spiritual concept is, I mean, its realm, the existence of it has been created for Krishna's happiness. So that's yoga maya. So then if we want to enjoy it, then that's when yoga maya just transfers into mahamaya. You know? And that's the point. So that point in the middle is us. We're the tatastha. So if it means in the spiritual world, they're all transcendental. So, I mean, they're all spiritual. And that ananda, that I mean, ananda means the, their internal potency. So therefore they only identify as servants of Krishna. But the Tathasta can do both. They can think, I am the enjoyer, enjoy the spiritual facilities. So at that time then Maya just starts to Yogamaya starts to transform into Mahamaya. Right? Therefore you can have in the same spot, in the same transcendental realm, pure and alloyed devotees and demons. You have the cowherd boys and you have Agasura. So Agasura is in the material world. He's on that covering on the dom. That Maya, that thin covering of Maya over the dom. So that's what he's in. He's in the material world. But the cowherd boys, they're in the spiritual world. They're in Vrindavan. And they can interact because that the Tathasta Shakti arranges those two to be together at once. Therefore, then those jivas, then they can, in that situation, see both and decide. So those gopis, though they're, you know, Krishna's nice and, you know, and everything, they were very attracted, but they still had that enjoying spirit. The Purusha Bhav was not gone.
So there's some special mercy that's required?
Well, we see that when they get the... Then it's like what happened to Bali Maharaj. There's an obstacle. Right? So then when Krishna played the flute and they wanted to go, because they're attracted. You know, they wouldn't be there if they're not attracted. But the attraction wasn't enough. There, it means it wasn't 100%. That's not what's Purva Rag. So it was less than Purva Rag. So they didn't get the association of those intimate associates, the eternal associates, that would bring that to the point of complete attachment. Like that. Because unless you follow in the footsteps of those with that rag, you don't get that rag. So they were almost perfect, but not quite, not fully. So therefore then we see that they got stopped. And when they got stopped, then in that their meditation, they obtain samadhi, because samadhi is the last stage of the third platform. It means there's five levels within the third stage of bhava sadhana. Like that. That's smarandas. So when smarandas becomes complete, when it's in samadhi, that's called purvarag. So they hadn't attained that. So then they went to, you know, all the things. You know, there's dhyana, and then there's this smriti, anusmriti, this, that, those are the typical aspects. Prabhupada gives them in a few places. There's five levels. And so samadhi is considered the perfection of meditation. So when one attains there, then the rag is perfect. Then you can go into the next stage. Because then at that point is that it's an arrangement of Tathasta Shakti, that you're in your spiritual body, but it still has material aspects to it. So when their meditation attained complete perfection, then all that material elements are gone. So then it's a pure spiritual body. There is no more material. It's not a mix. The body is no longer Tathasta. So it becomes pure. So that's why it's said that they didn't give up their body, because the spiritual body was there. But at the same time it says they gave up their body, because they gave up the material concepts that were there.
So that's the causal body they gave up?
Basically, yeah. Mm-hmm. It means the mundane causal body. Or where we think we're the enjoyer. So that's the subtlety. So that's why in the beginning we will say you should enjoy Krishna consciousness, because that's what we're looking for. We're looking for happiness. But once one gets purified more, then one understands that our happiness actually is Krishna's happiness. In the beginning we do because it makes us happy. Later we do it because it makes Krishna happy. Then you actually are more happy than the person who's working for their own happiness.
So the middle turning point is that the test you get from your relationship with Krishna that takes you into that higher platform?
And I would say it's more the need. The goal gets raised. The prayojan gets deeper. You know, it's just that you realize how important Krishna is. When you can't get Krishna, it means like Krishna is important, but doing the household chores and this and that are also important. You get your pleasure from this, you get your pleasure from remembering Krishna, you get from so many places. But then when, you know, when it comes down to it, then one sees that Krishna, he is the most, he is the actual need, the actual, you know, whole goal of everything. Then at that time the others then become minor. Then one is not attracted by them. One does out of duty. These gopis perform their household duties out of duty because, you know, social obligation. They don't want anybody to find out, you know, about their relationship with Krishna. So they do their duties very, very nicely. Right? That's why that example is given. You know, but at the same time, as their whole thought is always about Krishna, and whenever they can get to see Krishna and serve Krishna. Right? So then even they're performing their household duties to cover up the relationship is service. Therefore they do it more nicely. You know, so everybody thinks they're such wonderful housewives like that. But actually, you know, it's just to create the environment so that Krishna can enjoy the parikya rasa. Because if they can always be with him, even though they're not married, it's as good as parikya swakya. If it's standard that they can be together, even though it's parikya, whenever they want to be together, they can be together, then it's no longer really fully the taste of parikya, it's swakya. Though it may not be a formal swakya. Because parikya means is that it's not yours. So therefore does that mood, is that actually Krishna's from Mathura, anytime he could go. He's not ours. So therefore, every moment is relished as if it was, you know, could be the last, like that. So that the parakeet can be to its fullest at that point. So that's the need of being able to give up that end thing of our happiness, and it's his happiness. Because however he wants it to go, that's how it's going to. That's what is wanting. So it's a very deep aspect, then one is the most happy. Though it may not externally look like it is, but it's the most. Like that. Otherwise, if it wasn't the most happiness, then Krishna wouldn't have to come as Lord Chaitanya. Right? He wouldn't have to come and taste. And though he wants to taste, what is Radharani's attraction? What is Radharani's love? And what does she gain? What is the taste she gets from the service? He could do that what is it? Together?
Sambhav.
Yeah, he could do that in Sambhav. But that's not where he wants to taste it. He wants to taste those three, but he wants to taste them in their most deep, powerful form. And that's in separation. Therefore he goes as Lord Chaitanya. So they're very, very subtle. So therefore it gives the most happiness. It gives the most happiness.
Maharaj, some group of devotees increase their attachment to Krishna when Krishna shows to them special mercy and takes away their material comforts or material amenities. But then we find another group of devotees. They increase their attachment to Krishna by an obstacle to meet Krishna.
It's the same thing.
It's the same thing.
It's the same principle. Is that there's something between you and your goal. You know? It's what you want. There's something comes in the way, so it increases that. Or in the material world, it may frustrate you. And then you take shelter of something. When there's a problem, you take the mind... looking for happiness, so it will take shelter wherever it can get that happiness. You know, so any relationship, any situation, you know, like that, it will immediately, any individual, it will immediately go there when there's a problem. So then the whole idea is that going should always be to Krishna. Like that. So when there's an obstacle, they think of Krishna more. When you lose something, then you go to Krishna more. It's the same, but one, we're not necessarily happy when it happens. The other, then then the Krishna consciousness deepens. So if we're sincere, then when obstacles come, then we should think of Krishna. You know, but if we have too much material desire, then and we've approached Krishna for that, when there's an obstacle, we may in the beginning get upset with Krishna. But then by good association and, you know, proper, you know, how you say, reflection, then we can understand that, well, actually, it's just the way the material world is, so it's not Krishna's fault, it's our fault. You know, we've come here, we've performed the activities that require that reaction to purify us. You know, so actually it's not Krishna's fault.
Hasn't Prabhupada given the Srimad worship to remove those obstacles which are missing by Krishna's
service? Yeah, that would be there. Also for the protection of the mission, protection of the order of the Guru. It's what he gives, then that's what is that should be protected. Because it is the spiritual master. You know, it's just like the quotes that Janani Rasprabhu was reading today. Then, what was that, a conversation? Or you were reading about how not only the disciples are seen as expansion of the spiritual master, but also the paraphernalia and the situations that you're in, like that. So then when Prabhupada says he is ISKCON and all this, then one has to be able to see. It's a very high level. So it's like Madhyama can see it, though it may not always exist for him. He may not remember it. Uttama lives in that realm. Kanista doesn't even know it exists. But it's like we only exist because of the support of the spiritual master. So therefore we're being supported by friends, family, you know, temple authorities, you know, the facilities that are there, the wealth of the society, all this. So that's actually the spiritual master. The spiritual master is expanded into all that. So his potency is there, his blessing is there.
And the spiritual master is not your mind?
There's that's there, but we also see the who is the person. Like Prabhupada is seeing that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He has come as all his disciples. He has come as the paraphernalia and the temples and all the things that are there to create. So that's supporting your service. So that means it is the spiritual master. So it's yeah.
There's a very wonderful article that I have about Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, 1932, where he talks about Rutatha and says that he is the legs you walk with, the earth you walk on, basically everything.
Yeah. So it's that potency is then coming from him. Because Krishna isn't without his devotees, and devotees aren't without Krishna. You know, so like that. That's why it said when you see... Yeah. Okay. Yes.
You see that all the paraphernalia around that is the spiritual master in different forms? It means the potency of the spiritual master is there?
Yeah, the potency, so that's non-different. You know? It's just, that's why then one has to be respectful to everything, deal with everything properly, engage everything properly in Krishna's service according to its nature. We think it's ours, then that's a problem. That was Bali's wife's complaint. He's offering him his head, but he thinks it's his head, but it's Krishna's head, you know. He happens to be the caretaker of it, but it's already Krishna's. So who is he to offer his head when it already belonged to Krishna in the first place? Not only that, the whole universe belonged to him. What was his position to give 3 steps of land? It was already Krishna's. So because he thought it was his, that's why there's all this trouble. If he had been surrendered from the beginning, then he wouldn't have to go through all this insanity. That was her point. Yeah. But as Janani Rasprabhu pointed out, is then also she's thinking, but this is my husband is such an idiot, so she's in the same boat. But whatever it is, the theory is correct, though she may not have been realized, but it's there because it's in a very important point. Yeah. And,
That's why he's Atman Avedana.
That's why I start with this side. Yeah. So the thing is that surrender is that that's the what's glorious is that he surrendered. You know, the offering of the head is a symptom of that surrender.
Dodi sees that Krishna has given all these things to him, so he, in that sense, he's you know, given something.
Yeah.
At least I have it now. I'm giving it. Yeah.
But then the thing is then it's Krishna's given it to me, but then there's another element that Janayavas has brought up, and that's that actually it's the spiritual master. Then you have the complete vision. Right? Just to see the Krishna's energies in it is not enough, because Krishna's never alone. The spiritual master is also there. So when one sees those two, then one can't misuse. Because, you know, we've misused so long Krishna's energy. When you add the element that the spiritual master is there, then it has to be used in that direction.
So paraphernalia, body, everything is actually his?
Yeah, it's actually his. We'll be supported by that. It's his potency that it's going on. And we're engaged and we're able to do. You know, we think, I have this ability, I can do this, I can do that. But we don't. The ability is coming from Krishna. But we're only getting it because the spiritual master is giving the blessings. So therefore, because he's giving the blessings, it's his. You know? He's, by his blessings, you get Krishna's. So that means Krishna's blessings are in the hand of the spiritual master. Right? There's that one song. You know, Krishna is yours and you can give him to us. So therefore we're running behind these going, shouting, Krishna, Krishna. Right? It's said that Krishna is in the hands of his devotee. So the devotee gives. Of course, Krishna, when the means Krishna only can give himself. But he'll only give himself when the devotee wants that they obtain Krishna. So that factually means he's given the potency of giving himself to his devotee. So when the devotee says that this devotee should become a pure, it's this other person should become a pure devotee, they become a pure devotee. So it's on their direction rather than Krishna's. But because they are pure servants of Krishna, they know what Krishna wants, therefore they know when the standards are met. So that way, then you have both there at once. That's why when you get into like the later chapters of the Gita, it points out this vision. How to see Krishna in everything, time in everything, the modes working everything, all of that. So it's a very high level of Madhyama vision. Is how to separate the whole material world down into its elements, and then look at them just for their, you know, just what for what they are, and then be able to engage them for exactly just what they are. But at the same time, as it has a dryness to it, a slight dryness, because it's also the same thing used by the impersonalists, though not as the impersonalists are not as their technique is not as refined as the Vaishnavas. But this whole thing of seeing, you know, the mountains or the backbone or the oceans or this and that. So it's mentioned in the Bhagavatam that this is the beginning stages, the impersonalist, the transformer from God has no form into a form. So he first starts seeing energies. Energies, opulences, that's the universal form. You know, he says, you know, I'm the power of the mountains of, you know, Adityas, I am Vamana of this, I am, you know, so it's the potency that you see there, because Brahman is a potency. So then you turn that potency into things like that, and then you take it, then you see Krishna's hand behind it. He is a person, how he's operating and all that, and you see it in connection with the eternal realm. Is that the pastimes are going on there, and therefore that's why they look like it here. They're a reflection. But you distinguish between the material reflection and the real tree. Like that. But then, this is then the real platform of the Uttama. Means you get the Uttama can just see that. But then that's like the four Kumaras or Sukadeva Goswami. They just see everything as Brahman. Like that. But they haven't taken up the devotional. So when you take up the devotional, then you see everything as Brahman, you know, as Krishna. and you also see it as the spiritual master. Then it takes on its full. Then it becomes fully personal. Then the lila is pastime is included. Otherwise, it's just tattva. Then it becomes rasa. So this point that he was bringing out today is topmost vision. And we see Prabhupada could see like that. So it's therefore the spiritual master has come in this form, you know, to bring up these questions so that you'll speak on them and you'll realize yourself, yes, I have to be doing this. Like you have somebody come up to you and say, how much should we chant, you know? And so naturally then you'll say, you know, how much you can, you know, ideal is 24 hours a day. But that's being arranged so that we remember we're supposed to be chanting 24 hours a day. Oh, how do we chant 24 hours a day? Have to be humble, you have to be tolerant, you have to respect others. Then it's a matter of reflect, am I doing that myself? So therefore, the spiritual master has come in the form of seemingly a dependent. You know, at the same time, that's an individual soul who is getting benefit from that. But at the same time is that they have been empowered to do that by the spiritual master. So it's arranged that we are getting the benefit. They're getting their benefit as an individual soul, but we're getting our benefit. So that means the spiritual master is saving both. Like that. So it's a very fine thing. So because otherwise, well, if the spiritual master, then you would get like, the Ramakrishna thing is that, you know, Dridra Narayan, the dog's also Narayan, so when the dog steals the chapati, then you run after him going, wait, take some ghee for your chapati, you know, because here's God, you know. But no, the disciple is dealt with according to the regulations as a disciple, or the dependent is dealt with like that. That's their nature. Same time as we understand, because Krishna's arranged it, the spiritual master's arranged this, therefore there's something we are gaining from it also. So therefore it is our service to do that. We are taking care, not for our own enjoyment. We don't take care of our kids because we are of our attachment to them and we love being around the kids and hearing them when they crawl in our lap and say, Daddy or Mommy, and then we feel, you know, good and, you know, all needed. And all, that's the duty. Kids think like that. See, Bharat Maharaj, when he became attached to the deer, it's not like us becoming attached to a deer. He wasn't attached to the body, he was attached to the soul. But he understood that this soul is in ignorance. It thinks it's a deer. So therefore, as a deer, it's expecting to be dealt with in a certain way. It needs its mother, it needs to be taken care of. So therefore, feeling compassion for that soul who thinks they're a deer, then he was taken care of. That's the Uttam platform. His attachment wasn't like us. And then it's raining, it's storming, the deer will feel distressed because the living entity identifies with that deer body. So it'll feel material distress, and naturally the pure soul is kind, is compassionate. Like that. So therefore he's going out and looking. But still, it's a mistake. It's a subtle mistake, but it's still a mistake. Therefore, because his attachment was different from ours, his next life he could remember everything. If he came as a deer, he was a fully realized deer. And then that carried on as Jarabharat. Therefore it's there. Otherwise, why would so many kings may, you know, fall down due to attachment and this and their stories aren't there. His is there. Because he's a devotee and, you know, he's it shows just that one has to be very, very careful, even up to the, you know, threshold of love of God. Within Bhava, you still have to be careful. So those gopis, they had that attachment, they got stopped. He was maintaining, you know, the niceties within the transcendental platform, and therefore he also got stopped. So there's some really subtle stuff up there. That's the thing. And so once, if that is understood, then the endeavors on this plane for even spiritual situations, facilities, respect, influence, all these, they lose their taste. Because there's something so far beyond that this is, that maybe, okay, we engage our conditioned nature, we understand I'm an administrator, and, you know, I can do a lot of things. Therefore, it just should be engaged like that. Then my conditioned nature, its dharma is to do this, so therefore, my service, you know, if the facility is there, is to do that for Krishna. Then it becomes service. You're doing it because you're supposed to do it. Not because you want to do it, because you're supposed to do it. You know? And you want to do what you're supposed to do, so that's there. But there's no material motive, there's no personal gain. The gain is the happiness of doing what you're supposed to do, according to your nature. In other words, the results or the fruits of the work you're not interested in. The work, doing the work, that particular kind of work is the interest.
That's why purpose is we should organize our life in such a way that we can always hear and chant about Krishna.
Yeah.
So the essence is always there.
Yeah. So we keep that, then we go in. Yeah. Go on, okay. Yeah. We wish that this mass of our body of flesh and blood may be sacrificed at the altar of preaching the Sankirtan movement, congregational chanting of the holy name of Godhead, propagated by Lord Chaitanya. We are not desirous of becoming a hero of work or a reformer of religion. But our reality may be identified with the dust of the lotus feet of Sri Rupa and Raghunath, for that is our everything. The flow of the transcendental tide of the attraction of devotion will never be blocked, and you with all your energy shall devote yourself fulfilling the desire of Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur. There are many amongst you who are well qualified and able workers. We have no other desire whatsoever. There are certainly many difficulties while we are in this mortal world, but it is not our business simply to be overwhelmed with those difficulties or to try to overcome them only. We must know even during the duration of our present life as to what we shall gain after overcoming all those difficulties of life and what shall be the mode of our permanent existence. We must make an adjustment of all things that evoke our love and hatred. Our love and hatred, and for those things that we want and do not want. Attachment and detachment of this mortal world will engage us more and more as we become farther and farthest from the lotus feet of Sri Krishna. When we are able to transcend the position of attachments and detachments of this mortal world and be attracted with the holy name of Krishna, it is then only we can understand the import of the transcendental service of Sri Krishna, the Personality of Godhead. At the first instance, the subject Krishna is startling and perplexing to us. Everyone who is called by the name man is more or less struggling, knowingly or unknowingly, to eliminate those invading elements that are baffling our conception of eternal need. It is our only duty to enter into the kingdom of eternal need. We have no love or hatred for anyone in this world. All arrangements made in this world are but temporary. There is, therefore, unavoidable necessity for that ultimate need for everyone in this world. You should attain the transcendental loving service of the object, objective, being situated in concerted action for that one aim. Let there be a constant flow of the ideas and thoughts as conceived by Rupa Goswami and his followers. We shall not at any time show our slightest dejection for the seven-tongued Sankirtan movement. If you have undaunted faith in it, we shall then only achieve all perfections. You should all, therefore, preach with fearlessness and with utmost energy the message of Rupa and Raghunath under the guidance of the followers of Sri Rupa. Okay, the seven-tongued Sankirtan movement is that the first verse of the Sikshastaka, because it has seven parts, Chaita Dharpana Marjanam, Bhava Mahasa Lakni, Vavani. So those seven make up the Sankirtan movement, because Agni, he has seven tongues like that, so the fire, the Sankirtan Yajna, then that form of Agni, the seven tongues are then these seven aspects of the mantra. So to become overwhelmed with difficulties, or to only work to overcome them, these material obstacles, or and to become attached to the material world, to become fully detached, these aren't the goal. The goal is to develop our affection for Krishna. Though to develop that affection, we have to give up attachment to this world, but then that mood of detachment we also have to give up. Because that's also connected. It means you have something, and then you're either attracted to it or repulsed from it, but it's the same thing. But at least the repulsion, then you can look at it in a different light. You're not bewildered by it. If you don't like something, you tend to be more have a critical eye of it. So it's more useful than when we're attached, and even the worst quality then to us looks nice. So that's therefore detachment is more useful than attachment, like that. But even that must be given up. So it's thorn with a thorn. It means you have attachment, you take it out with the thorn of detachment, like that. But then both have to be thrown. So one must go beyond all these things to the transcendental, developing love for Krishna. So he's pointing out here that all people who we call man, you know, human beings, they all have problems, and those problems are actually obstacles to developing love for Krishna, but they don't know it. All the problems they come across are because of their attachments to this material world. That when they can give up those attachments and become attached to Krishna, means the ultimate need, then all the needs of this material world are already satisfied. But they're thinking that it's a particular material goal, and this material obstacle has come in the way. But even the goal is Krishna. The obstacle coming in the way is Krishna. So because that goal is Krishna, then they have to take it beyond to actually get to Krishna, rather than how he's, you know, empowered aspects of this material world that attract us to it. Is that making some sense? Yeah.
So if you say that obstruction to Krishna as Krishna, then what is your position then?
Then it's like Bhavan Maharaj. What we see is that he's seen the obstruction as Krishna. So therefore, then he becomes glorious. You know, he became, basically, by the perfection of this point, is how he's attained to the status of Mahajan. You know. Within this situation, he is surrendered completely, and this is his qualification of Mahajan. So you see, let's say I'm making it a material endeavor, you know, or I'm making a devotional, seemingly devotional endeavor, but it's covered by some material aspect, either more or less. Then there's going to be an obstacle that's going to match that. So then, if we see them both as Krishna, then we understand I shouldn't be going for that, I should be just the essence of that, that's Krishna. And the obstacle is Krishna, Krishna is reminding me of that. Then it becomes.
But sometimes the obstacle is so intense that you can't think like that, you have to deal with the obstacle.
No, it says only, he uses the word only here. It is not our business simply to be overwhelmed with those difficulties or to try to overcome them only. So it means to become overwhelmed with them. That's not our business, to become overwhelmed. It may be overwhelming, but to become overwhelmed is not our business. And to strive to only cure that, no, it means it's beyond it, because it has to be connected to Krishna. So it means it is. That's
two
our...
Things. Huh? You have to do two things.
Yeah. Not be overwhelmed, and to work to overcome what is causing the difficulty, because it's Krishna's work. The work is Krishna's, and so the obstacles then are to be removed so that Krishna's service goes on nicely. Like that, because the result we want for Krishna, like that. That's the principle of Naishkarmya, is that we perform our work, but what we're going to gain from that is Krishna. You know, it's for Him. Results are for Him. Then it becomes nice.
I understand how the obstacles also Krishna.
Because Krishna is arranging it. Because for the devotee, there's no karma. It means for the karmis, then it's still Krishna arranging it, but through just the modes of nature. They've already been told what to do, what Krishna wants to happen in that situation. The modes of nature just take care of it. So the difference is that for the devotee, Krishna is arranging that these difficulties may arrive, or that nice situations might arrive. So it looks similar to karma. Because karma means you're performing an activity in this world, right? And you're going to do that because of a particular polluted mentality. So when that mentality is polluted, you do an activity. So let us say now you become a devotee. Still that desire is there. Those activities may still be there, right? So then that has to be removed. So the medicine's the same, right? It means if a karmi has a cold and a devotee has a cold, is it a different medicine? No, right? It means a karmi eats rice, dal, and sabji, and a devotee eats rice, dal, and sabji, right? Karmi sleeps at night, devotees sleep at night. You know, karmis take a bath, devotees take a bath, but there's a difference. One is working in the realm of samsara and karma, and the devotee is not. So for the karmis, it's being arranged by the modes of nature. They already know what to do. And for the devotee, then it's being arranged by Krishna. Because according to karma, you're only going to get what Krishna wants when. The other one is just going to happen according to the process. You know, it means the standard workings in the material world, those, what do you call it, machinations? Those machinations are going to take care of it. You know, you've done this, and so after this much time, you're going to get that much fruit. But Krishna may decide you're going to get that before or after, or he'll reduce it, or this one he'll leave, because the mentality is adjusted. If the mentality is adjusted, there's no need to give it. Because you'll see, if you're in a situation where something happens that's unfavorable, and it doesn't bother you, it means that the mentality has already been corrected, and you don't see it as bad. One might say, well, why is it? But you don't see it as bad. And then it's a good example for others, because then in this situation, like Yudhishthira, he's not at all disturbed. He's lost everything. They just worked so hard, they had nothing. Went through so much trouble, they were out in the forest, hiding away. Then when they win the hand of Draupadi, and they make alliance with Drupad, then things start picking up. Then the Kauravas see, well, maybe we should deal with them properly. So we'll give them half the kingdom. And the half they give them is absolutely useless. They give them this, what's called Kuru Jungala. It used to be the capital of the Kurus. It was very prosperous in that. And then somebody along the line did something that annoyed some sage, and they got cursed. And the whole place turned desolate. Nobody lives there. There's not even a settlement there. No tribals, nothing lives out there. You know? And so that's the land that's been given to them. It won't even grow anything. Right? It's been cursed. So this is, and it's half the kingdom by size, definitely. This is what's been given to Yudhishthira. Right? But he takes it. But it depends upon Krishna, and then Krishna goes there with him. And when they get out there and see this absolutely desolate place, then Krishna calls Indra and tells Indra, I want a city here. So then Indra calls Vishwakarma, and they just build the whole city. That's why it's called Indraprastha, because Indra arranged it. And under Indra's direction it was built. And then, from that, then he performs the Rajasuya sacrifice, which means nobody performs the Rajasuya sacrifice. That means you have to have gone, and each and every king accepts your authority. Not an easy task. So that means you either have to be more powerful than them, or they respect your qualities so much naturally. So either you've defeated them by your personal prowess, or you defeat them by physically fighting with them. In any case. So every last person on this planet has to be, and there's a lot of people here like Gandharvas and others that are here also in the Himalayas. So Arjuna went to them and they also gave tribute because of the qualities. You're not going to fight with them. But they feel that the qualities of Yudhishthira, he deserves to be emperor. So then they give so much. So therefore, then besides getting everything tribute from all of them, Then when they all come, every king brings gifts. And each one brings so much. They bring 1,000 of whatever they're going to give. If they're going to give chariots, there's 1,000 chariots. Elephants, 1,000 elephants. You know, whatever it is that they're giving, there's 1,000 of them. And there's thousands and thousands of kings. So the wealth is so much, Duryodhana has never seen this in his life. And he's, basically, they are like the emperors of the world. But they're not unrivaled emperors. Right? But here, Yudhishthira, unrivaled emperor. You come to that, means the only other king in that whole line that ever did this was Harishchandra. No one else. That means that even his own father and you know, Bharat and Yadu and Kuru, they never did this. Only Harishchandra. So then, and that position, from there to lose everything and have nothing, and it doesn't disturb him, because his mind is not attached. Does that make some sense? So therefore, then that is example for us. But if it bothers him, then that is for him. So in the situations that happen to us, even if it's unfavorable, if it bothers us, there's something we're supposed to be learning from it. If it doesn't bother us, then it is just simply, you know it's the final thing, Krishna's just testing. And others may be inspired by the example that we set. That make sense?
Does it mean that Krishna acts directly even in... Krishna directly acts only in the lives of pure devotees.
He directly acts, but point is he'll be working through the modes of nature. But see, the difference is for the karmi, the material nature has already been instructed before, so it just runs. She knows what to do. She knows how to run her office. But Krishna then, for the devotee, tells her what to do, though she is doing it. But when one comes to the position of so much affection for Krishna, then he himself personally does it. Like we see with Draupadi, that Krishna personally came and provided the cloth for her because of her devotion and surrender. He personally, you know, stopped the Brahmastra, you know, in Pariket Maharaj, you know, because of Uttara's devotion. And Pariket also is a great devotee. So personally he does it. You know, personally he drives Krishna's chariot. Personally he's a messenger for the Yudhishthira, you know, going to as the peace messenger of peace. Personally he's doing these things. But for others, other devotees, aspiring devotees, he's also personally doing, but through the medium of the material energy. Right? See, so there's a difference between the boss telling the boss doing it himself because of intimacy, or the boss telling his personal secretary to get it done. So that's as good as him doing it himself. The other thing is there's just duties that the boss doesn't even worry about. They've already instructed the secretary, and they do it when he doesn't. So the secretary doesn't, should I throw out the garbage today? You know, like that. It's just that the garbage is already being thrown out, and this is being gotten, and these phone calls being made. So Maya's already just managing the lives of the materialists. She knows what to do. But then Krishna, through Maya, then provides everything for the devotees. Provides, creates the situations, this and that. But it's him directing.
A little while earlier you said that even when people do activities for material benefits, if it's done according, even close to Dharma, then Krishna is pleased. But
it means to different degrees. We're talking, we're not saying he's pleased, we're saying is that according to the degree that they're coming closer to the proper religion, then he's more pleased, so therefore the result is better.
Isn't he aloof from the material world?
He's aloof, that's why I said it's arranged, that Maya means, the point is if we do something that is supposed to be done, then Maya arranges that because it's closer to what Krishna wants. So you have to put the two together. Because Krishna is pleased, but he's pleased, he's already told Maya that if someone does this, this is what they'll get. They do that, that's what they'll get. And then she runs it. She manages it. But in the life of the devotee, he will get personally involved. Okay? So, anything else? Because otherwise we should end. Can I say something?
He said that we shouldn't love or hate anything in the material world. But how do we understand what Prabhupada said that we should be pessimistic about the material world?
Pessimistic doesn't mean hate. Hate means that there's some emotional thing. Pessimistic means we don't think this place is going to make us happy. We just see it for what it is. So here pessimism means that we see the material world for what it is, not for what we think it is. Śrīla Bhakti Siddhānta Saraswati Thakur ki, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Samavita Bhakti Vrinda ki, Jainita Gaura ki. Means we're following the rules just to get Krishna. You know? So if it comes between the two, it's just like Yudhishthira. You know, please Krishna was done to say Ashwatthama was dead. And because he didn't do it, you know, then, you know, he didn't lie. So then some say, because he said Ashwatthama, the elephant, was dead, but it was done in such a way it came across as a lie. So some say his chariot touched the ground because he told that lie. But others say his chariot touched the ground because he didn't. Like that.
Maharaj, isn't that common amongst the philosophy to say we're doing it so we can get Krishna? Isn't that sort of like a karmic mentality? Isn't it more that we're doing it because then hopefully Krishna will recognize
that? Yeah, well, that's what it means. Mm. You know, that getting Krishna means you only get Krishna when Krishna is pleased.
Mm-hmm.
It's to distinguish between trying to get things of this world and trying to understand that the things to get are not in this world but in the next world. And then within that, then you get into the finitudes. But one has to distinguish between matter and spirit. That's the first thing. Then within spirit, one makes distinction. Just as in matter, we make distinction. You know how the modes work, and time, and all these different things. So in the spiritual platform, then also we make distinction.